From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, it's the 10th edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. 11 people, diverse in age, ethnicity, a little, and political leanings, are engaged in a year-long experiment in civil discourse. Each month, we bring you a conversation with members of the group. We're observing how the tone and quality of the conversation changes over the course of the year and whether people with different views grow to value time with one another. As the group progresses, we're trying to tackle more difficult conversations. We don't always know where these discussions will lead, and it's important to remember our goal is not a robust, cleanly fact-checked debate on the issue. Our goal is to lean into curiosity about how other people think and see the world. To be clear, there is absolutely a place for the hard debate of issues with facts. There is a place for pointing out the error in a line of so-called logic. There is a place for challenging assumptions, but this is not it. This experiment is designed to see whether people can diverge ideologically and still enjoy time with one another. Because if they can, we have to ask then what is possible in government, and will citizens ever reach a point when they will no longer tolerate the current political tone. Our topic today, the qualities we admire and seek out in our leaders. We're talking about leadership today, what that means, who our current leaders are, the qualities we want to see. With us today, Cedric, founder of the nonprofit Support the Port, Jim, a glass artist and New Jersey transplant, Lee, an actor and woodworker, Lydia, artist and mom to a toddler, Bruce, retired engineer and community and church volunteer, Daryl, retired engineer and occasional wizard, Carl, a musician and Army veteran, Connette, an insurance broker, Joe, a real estate broker and GOP volunteer, and Morgan, recently earning her master's degree from UNCW's creative writing program. Welcome, BTSers.
Thank you.
Hi. Yeah, yeah.
Just a reminder, the show is pre-recorded. If you have a comment or would like to share your own observations, email us at coastline@whqr.org. Do you believe the House should impeach President Donald Trump? Joe.
What'd you pick on me? I started laughing. As you indicated my background in introducing all of us, I think the impeachment process, as it now stands, is a major challenge to the well-being of the country. I do not disagree with the fact that, you know, the House has the ability to impeach, and it's a very serious process. I'm just reacting right now to the nature of the inquiry as it is, and as to whether or not, knowing my political preferences and background, I think it's ridiculous to think in terms of what they're saying is an impeachable offense. However, right now I'm reacting to the process because I just don't think it's fair in the nature of, you know, giving both sides the opportunity to air their dirty linen in public, if you will.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you more about how you got there. But first, I want to get some more opinions about that question out on the table. Lydia.
Yes. I think that the House should impeach the president, and there's so many reasons why. Mostly it has to do with the deconstruction of democratic norms over time. But, I mean, you can start back with Trump insulting, you know, a Gold Star family who sacrificed their own child to protect, you know, American law. And then there's the genital grabbing. There's the campaign finance cover up with Stormy Daniels. There's the, you know, coordinating with foreign governments to undermine our own, you know, security and intelligence community. I mean, the total breakdown and disrespect for the presidency itself and the way that the presidency should be interacting with Congress and the judiciary, I think, is breaking down what makes America strong, which is checks and balances. And it's some of the moral and ethical foibles that he's responsible for, but mostly I think it's total disrespect for the American Constitution and the rule of law.
Bruce.
Well, I don't think it serves the country very well to go through this impeachment process. And but I believe the House certainly has the right and probably the obligation and the duty to initiate the inquiry and the impeachment process.
So you don't, I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. You don't think it serves the country, but the House has the duty and the obligation to proceed?
Yes. Yes.
But they have a choice. Explain the divergence in those two things.
Well, they have a choice. Like we do with any obligation or duty, we can choose to ignore it or we can choose to pursue it. And to carry this through to the entire fulfillment and the conclusion, I think will be damaging to the country.
So are you saying then in service of the country, they should choose to ignore it? Is that what you're saying? I mean, why would those two ends diverge? The idea of what's good for the country and the idea of what the House leaders, the members of the House, should do.
Are we debating, Rachel, or are you
asking
my opinion?
No, we're not. It's a real question. I'm really trying to understand why those two goals, the good of the country and the House inquiry,
They have the obligation because of what he has done. And so we all know that he is his character is greatly flawed, and his sanity may even be in question. But I don't believe it is the right thing to pursue at this time.
You don't? Okay. I wasn't clear on that. Connette.
Same question?
Yeah.
I don't think it's for the good of the country to impeach President Trump particularly for what he has done, because I think a lot of this has occurred in previous administrations. It just hasn't been brought to the forefront. I think there's a lot of cover-up, criminal activity, unethical practices in our government, and we need to clean it up. I don't know who the right person is to clean it up, but I think that President Trump is trying it his way, which isn't always the best way. But I don't think impeachment is going to be the best answer.
Carl.
This impeachment thing is... I'm more upset that we are put in this situation, that we are put into this, that behaviors, that any of our political leaders' behaviors put us into a situation where we have to consider doing things like this, that we have to consider whether we should impeach or not impeach, whether we should condemn someone for their behavior. It is... If this has been going on before, then I wish we would have caught it then and done something about it then. If it's going on now and we are looking at it, then we should do something about it now. This behavior I'm talking about now, I'm not talking about a process or procedures or who is doing what, who's getting to say what. It's irrelevant to me. What's relevant is, if we as Americans accept this type of behavior from people, then okay, then we do it. We good. Let's just go ahead on and don't have laws if we're not, and don't apply those laws to little people, to poor people, if we're not going to follow through with them on everybody. That's my word on that.
Lee.
I, up until about 2 months ago, my feeling was that if you have a problem with Donald Trump, make sure he doesn't get reelected in 2020. You know, I have a problem with Donald Trump, and I am going to work to see that he's not reelected. If he is impeached and not convicted and removed from office by the Senate, which I think would be almost ridiculously hard for it to happen. But I think the situation with Ukraine shows a fairly obvious abuse of power. And the testimony that the House committees have received seems to corroborate that. But the smoking gun is in the rough transcript that the White House released. And I think that at that point, I see an obligation for the House to do something, to bring proceedings. So I think it's going to be very difficult, but I think we have to work through it.
So are you saying that you see that what Bruce was...
No, I see the obligation that Bruce was referring
right.
to.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Jim, we're probably going to have to come back to you because we have about 30 seconds or so, but is that a thumbs up or a thumbs down on impeachment for Donald Trump?
That's a thumbs up, and I don't really have anything more to say on that, except that... Yeah, it's the duty of the Congress to do it. I mean, there's enough evidence that we've at least seen so far to say yes. So we should go ahead, regardless of whether or not the Senate does anything after that.
You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. It's a conversation about leadership, the qualities we value in leaders. We're going to hear from Cedric about what he thinks on the impeachment question when we come back from this break and continue the conversation. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, we're exploring what it means to be a leader, why we choose one leader over another. Our civil discourse year-long experiment includes 10 people today. We're missing one person, Catherine. With us now, Morgan, Lee, Joe, Cedric, Bruce, Lydia, Jim, Carl, Connette, and Daryl. In segment one, we asked the question, do you believe President Donald Trump should be impeached? The person we have yet to hear from on that point is Cedric. How would you answer that question, Cedric?
Yes, impeach him. I have a lot of friends that get in trouble that have done a lot less. So how does he get to get away with all of these things? Even as you look at the environment that we're in right now, and especially like with the Me Too movement and things of that nature, I'm honestly shocked as into how he's still able to occupy that position there. It would be interesting to see what would happen to Obama if he would have made those same actions and statements. If people would be vocally saying that they don't want him in office either because of those things.
Morgan.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Do you want to tell us why?
I believe that Nancy Pelosi knows what she's doing. I trust her. And so if she says impeach, I believe she has the evidence and information necessary to do so. I, in my hopes and dreams, hope that Pence is also implicated and then Nancy Pelosi will be our president. That's a real pipe dream. But because having lived through past impeachments, it's a slap on the wrist. It's a label. And I believe that it will be a great historic label to say that this man was impeached and that America stood against him. But I don't think that means he'll be out of office. So I can see why people think it's a waste of time, and there's so much going on in our country that needs attention, and this is another sleight of hand and another distraction.
Daryl.
I agree with what was just said. It's a great distraction. It's a distraction from what needs to be done in the United States. It's unfortunate that we have leadership and management that is creating a lot of discord in our country. His management style is not one that I would in any way, shape, or form endorse or support. It's a management style. His leadership ability is very questionable because, unfortunately, more than half of the people voted for him. And so they have chosen him as their leader.
Well, they didn't.
Actually, no.
We're not into a debate. Okay.
That's the electoral college and popular vote question.
Yeah, okay. And I don't want to get into that.
And we're talking about you, Daryl. What you think about it?
I think it's a distraction, the impeachment. I think he has done some things that are personal in nature that do not reflect the office, and consequently he should be held accountable for his personal behavior, and I would think that he would have had enough sense to have corrected some of the personal behaviors that he's had, and apparently he doesn't, and that's what really disturbs me.
But essentially impeachment is not something that should go forward.
I think it's a great distraction. It takes people away from what needs to be done. Get the guy out of office. If you don't like him, vote him out.
Okay.
And but let's not waste in the next 18 months dealing with an issue that in the past has proven fruitless, like with Clinton and with even talk with George H.W. Bush or George Bush, and back to Nixon time, stuff like that. It's a waste of time and effort because you know damn well that at the end of the day he's going to apply legalisms and get the hell out.
I want to go back to what happened during the break. Carl, you were asking the question, what else does he need to do before there are consequences for him? Can you tell us about that? What did you mean by that question?
First, I want to say I don't really care about him. I care about our standards. I care about who we are and what we as American people represent and what we believe in. That's what I think is getting thrown out in all this. Everybody says it's too much stress to go jumping on this or too much. But is it to say that I believe in this? I believe in that. This is what we are as Americans. If the world is looking at us and saying, who are these Americans? Who are these people? What do they believe in? Then they look at us and we just do anything. Our leaders do anything. They do anything they want. So we as Americans don't stand up and say, hey, we don't agree with that. That's not the behavior that we represent as Americans. Either we say that, or we say, oh, it's too much trouble to bother with. Let's just leave it and let the process wear it out. No, but by the time you let the process wear it out, you've destroyed our standards because we are going lower and lower. We are finding so much reason to argue with each other about things that shouldn't even be happening anyway. They shouldn't be happening. If we believe in what we say we believe in, if we are the people we say we are, then the things that these people are doing, and see, if I say him, then everybody, oh, no, you just jumped. I don't want to say who. I'm just saying the things that are popping up in our news that are happening in our country are things that if we are who we are, if we are the godly people and the caring people that and the people of democracy that we say we are, then those things can't happen in America. We can't have people rushing through our Congress acting crazy. That happens in foreign countries. That happens in other countries. It doesn't happen in the United States of America. That's not who we are. But if that's who we are, then okay, let's go. Let's do our thing. But somewhere we have to stand up and say, this is where the line is. This is who we are. This is not who we are. I don't care who the person is. Because when you start talking about that, then you go off on some all kinds of crazy stories about this and that and this and that. I don't care about that. Who are we? That's my question.
Lydia.
I like what Carl said because I do have a question. You know, if the House doesn't stand up to impeaching the president, and I think we're all in agreement that, you know, he's an unethical, morally bankrupt person. But if we talk about the actual political strategies that, you know, and the disrespect for American institutions and law, you know, things that he's committed aside from the moral failings, there's some real problems here. What happens when the president is colluding with foreign leaders to ensure that they get reelected? You know, what's with cozying up to Mohammed bin Salman, Kim Jong-il, Vladimir Putin? Is that the kind of country that we want to live in? Do we want to live in a country like Russia where the oligarchs and the kleptocrats steal from the middle class and that most people are poor? Is that the place that we want to live? I mean, our president seems to favor authoritarianism, and he cozies up to, and he's trying to ensure his reelection campaign by working with foreign powers that have no interest in the quality of our lives, you know, per capita income for Americans or the, you know, education for the middle class. Vladimir Putin doesn't care about any of those things. Why does President Trump think that he has better intelligence than the FBI and the CIA?
Now, when you hear Lydia speak and you hear the conclusions that she draws about the kind of person that President Trump is, I want to ask the people who say the impeachment process should not move forward. I mean, Daryl, you say it's a distraction. Bruce, you've said it wouldn't be good for the country. Joe, Connette, you actually said earlier that there is wrongdoing on both sides and that he's targeted at this point. Am I making a leap when I say that your conclusion was the other side is targeting him because they're the other side? Is that a fair assessment?
I do believe some of that's going on. Again, we have to get back to what's really important for the citizens of the United States. Everything seems to be a battle, whether it's health care. It doesn't matter. It's a battle. And it's either this way or that way, and nobody's compromising. We need different leadership, but we need it in more than one place. And we need it on a state level as well as a federal level. And our leaders are not leading based on the Constitution. As Carl said, I mean, he fought for this country. And we have standards. And the people are the ones who can make a difference.
Is it true that there is agreement here that President Donald Trump is, as Lydia puts it, unethical and morally bankrupt? Does everybody agree that Donald Trump is unethical and morally bankrupt, Joe?
Why me? Hell no.
Okay, Tom.
It's a reality. And what people don't understand is there's a lot of factors that go into this. But if you think that what's happening now, on the level that it's happening, is not business as usual, then everybody sitting around his table is extremely naive. Mm-hmm. The reality is, we don't have to go back too far, but everybody loves FDR, but he had his little thing on his side. Eisenhower had a Jeep driver. You know, John Kennedy had Marilyn Monroe.
So your perception—
Here's what's happened. The nature of technology has changed. You've got 24-hour news cycles. So what was hidden before and what was off limits before is now being out there in the real world. We talked about currying favor with foreign leaders. I remember, you know, Mr. Obama leaning over his tell Vladimir when the election is over, you know, we got things in shape. Now,
I didn't question that. Why? Because these guys deal with it on a lot of levels. You know, if you don't, there's two sides to every story. You know, Korea, we haven't had any, you know, major hassles in terms of, you know, missiles being fired. You talk about China. We are now in a situation where economically and you know, the tariffs are in shape. So Donald Trump is different. I don't agree with what he says in terms of his personality. But if you think, you talk about the economic development, you know, the data is that the average family, with everything that's happening, is $3,000 to $6,000 more in income every year.
What is the average family?
But who knows? But but the same thing we talk about. My $6,000. We talk about, but every administration has done this.
So your perception.
Not to this degree.
Hang on 1 second. I just want to make sure that we're clear about the fact that, Joe, you're saying that Donald Trump himself and components of his administration are targeted because they're Republicans. Is that right? No. Tell me.
If there was a Democrat who came in and is upsetting the apple cart in terms of how business as usual, they would have the same thing from both sides.
So you're saying he's being targeted because
of his style and what
renegade.
He's doing and what he's not doing the norm. You've got the people from the State Department going over. They have a vested interest in terms of keeping the status quo.
Okay, so you're saying he's targeted because he's a renegade. So let's talk about, Carl.
But I hear you saying that our country is corrupt. Just dirt, down, dirt, corrupt. That's what you just said. No, wait. You went all the way back to FDR.
That's correct.
And said that if we are sitting here at this table and don't realize that this is business as usual, please don't tell me that. Because all those 20 years that I went and fought for this country, I wasn't fighting for that.
No, I understand.
And I wasn't. No, let me finish, though. Okay. I let you finish. I wasn't fighting for that. And I'm not fighting for our country to turn into something corrupt. If we see that we are, that's like me, if I see I'm riding into a train with my car, does that mean I just keep going? Or do I say, hey, I'm going to stop. I'm not going to let this happen. If this is what's happening to our country, put me in the line. I'm ready to get in the line and fight inside. Not I don't want a civil war, but I will fight politically to make sure that this is not what's happening to my country. I don't want that. And you know, I argue with my kids. My kids always say, Dad, man, this country's not what you think it is. I said, yes, I know it's not, but I can still hope and dream and work to make it a better place. And if I hear, and I've heard this over and over again, if you continue to tell me that this is just normal, this is normal business, and that we should just say, okay, it's all right, just let it go, and everything will be all right. Everything won't be all right. Look at it now. Look where we are. We're sitting at this table. Connette said a few minutes ago that we argue with each other so much about little things. This is why. Because all this stuff is going on, and if my country is this corrupt, then I'm sad. I will leave here 10 times sadder than I walked in here this morning. This would be a very sad, sad day for me.
Joe, tell us, no, let's get off the policy now and let's get off the person, because I think the frustrations on both sides are pretty well laid out at this point. And I think it would be interesting for the people who want to see impeachment move forward and who think lines have been crossed that have never been crossed before. It would be interesting for them to hear what it is about Donald Trump that you think makes a good leader, just the qualities.
Number one, he doesn't believe in the definition of insanity, doing the same things over and over again, expecting different results. He has come in and brought a different style, management style to a total and complete bureaucracy that's been rolling along for years and years and years. He doesn't believe in the bureaucracy. He thinks he's a decision maker, and that's how he reacts. And that's totally and completely different from any other president we've had. And what's happening is that he goes around the establishment. And that's creating a great deal of challenge to the establishment. They're losing power. They're losing.
So I'm not asking for I'm asking for the qualities that you see in Donald Trump.
He's a different type. He has a different style.
Okay.
Now, there are times that style is a major problem, because what happens is you go in and you blow something up. There's got to be somebody along to come back and put the pieces together again. And that's where the part of the challenge is, because in his style, our government does not work as fast or as direct as, you know.
Do you remember, Joe, the first time, and I'm probably going to have to come back to get the rest of this answer, but the first time you saw someone who was a renegade and who just blazed a new trail and did things the way he thought they should be done. Do you remember?
Yeah.
How old were you? Who would that person have been?
Probably me.
So what we're seeing, you're seeing the qualities that you like in yourself reflected in Donald Trump.
I'm certainly not, you know, subscribing to all his values and or behavior.
I'm not suggesting you are. I'm just talking about what you think makes him a good leader.
What happens is that someone has got to begin questioning the system. And again, doing the same thing.
That's getting back into the policy stuff. We're talking about you, Joe.
Yeah.
We're talking about you.
I remember in high school, I questioned the system and challenged the system. And it was a military school, and I was an officer. I had more zippers on my stripes and my bars because I was busted and promoted so often.
Okay.
I think about my role on the board of the hospital.
We're running out of time. Going to check back with you in a second. You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. Part 3 of the conversation comes up right after this short break. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline Beneath the Surface. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, it's a conversation with our civil discourse group about leadership, what it means, what we value, when we're willing to make trade-offs, when we might accept tribalism over truth on both sides. If you're just joining us, our group of about a dozen people, now technically at 11, meets once a month to discuss an issue. The group ranges in age, political leanings, and ethnicity. Our goal is to find out whether, over the course of the year, the members of the group come to appreciate time spent together, even with their divergent views. Can people who disagree on politics and policy like each other? With us today, 10 of the 11, Cedric, Joe, Lydia, Bruce, Carl, Connett, Daryl, Jim, Lee, and Morgan. Bruce, you'd like to add something.
Yeah, the last question you put to us, Rachel, was what is it about the president's leadership that maybe you think is good or you admire or that characterizes him? And the words that come to mind for me are bold, undaunted by conventional thinking, and visionary. Now, you can argue with those. But if you think about it and what he has done, aside from all the moral character issues, he is bold, he is visionary, and he's undaunted by conventional thought and conventional processes.
Now I'm going to stop you there.
I have another thought.
About Donald Trump? Because what I want to know is, based on what you just said, when was the first time you remember seeing a person who you thought was bold and visionary and undaunted by convention? How old were you? Where were you? Who was the person?
I don't remember. I have seen some people who are that way. I can't remember.
As a teenager, as a child, can you
probably
think of
someone? Probably as a child.
Who might that have been? Like if maybe it's not the first time, but the first person you remember that you thought, wow, they're bold. And they're not.
Probably a friend in high school.
Huey P. Newton.
Who?
He was bold.
Yeah.
Who? Huey P. Newton, the leader of the Black Panthers.
Oh, yeah.
He had a vision.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But people didn't like his leadership.
I don't remember him very well, but I think he was unfairly treated, as I recall, at the time. But like many leaders, in hindsight, they see the value.
So but this friend of yours, I want to hear about this friend. What did, and that's not where you want to go. And
oh,
I can
but go ahead.
This friend,
for sure.
Was this a male or female?
Male.
And what did he do that made you think, wow, that's, that he's not hamstrung
I'll
by
I'll
anything.
I'll not give you the setting, but he said something to the effect of, we're not doing this right. You're not doing this right. We got to do it better. You got to do it better. You have to assume the responsibility. You have to act like you really want it. And that's what we need to do.
And so he was a visionary, too.
He was, yeah. But let me come back to what I want to talk about. And it starts with something that says, we are all flawed. Now, that's a kind of a Judeo-Christian ethic, but we are all flawed. When we see leaders who are flawed, and they're all flawed in some way, it is crushing to us. It is crushing to us because it confronts us with our fallibility, with our flaws. And when we see it in someone that is on a pedestal, that's crushing to us. And so I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing. And you have to recognize, as Joe would agree, all leaders are flawed. But we have a media now where we get instant feedback on all the mistakes everybody makes, whether it's parents bribing universities, whatever these flaws are, that bothers us. Because we'd like to think of our culture and our society, Carl, as being better than that. But when we see it, we don't like it, because we compare it and we say, you know, I'm flawed too. I'm not doing things too well. And in the leadership, that's crushing.
Cedric.
I only see white men get away with being flawed in leadership positions. Whenever it's a black man that's flawed, they get annihilated very quickly. What we're seeing here with Donald Trump is just an example of white supremacy at its best. The rich white man running around doing what he wants to do without having any consequences for it. And that's what's happening. If Obama was doing the same things, this would not even be a long debate. It would already be action taking place for impeachment moves to happen like that. And to hear him say, like, okay, I guess I can't disagree with his traits that he says about Donald Trump, but what triggered me a little bit was when he said he was a visionary. Donald Trump's vision isn't for everybody. Everybody isn't included in his vision. And so ever since he's been in that leadership role as a president, it has been a group of people that have not been appreciated and really ultimately oppressed again through this spotlight of him being able to run around and doing exactly what he wants to do, but then we see continuous black leaders to still get chopped down. For example, like Bill Cosby, whatever, however you want to look at it, or whatever.
Are you comparing Bill Cosby to Donald Trump?
I feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I feel like it.
Cedric,
yeah.
I want to go to Lee in a second because he's been sitting on a bonfire for a while, but before we do that, just tell us, when you were a kid, who was the first person that you saw that made you think, that is a leader and that's somebody that I would follow? Who really just lit you up?
Stokely Carmichael.
Okay, and what qualities in that person do you think lit you up? What was it?
I saw a resemblance of myself from studying his movement as he was a part of the nonviolent SNCC movement in his beginning years, following Martin Luther King. And then as they did the freedom journey down south, and he witnessed that young white lady getting killed in support of them, and that ignited him to create the Black Power movement. I thought it was a bold move. It was my first time realizing that all black people weren't in agreement with Martin Luther King during that time. It was Martin Luther King talked about a dream and talked about a better future, but it was people that were there during that moment that wanted a better today. And that was the first person that inspired me.
Lee, let some of that fire out. So this is radio. I'm going to have to describe it, but there's been a lot of shifting around and arms crossed and looking at, down.
I'm afraid I agree with Carl that there, an acceptance of Donald Trump as just business as usual means that we accept that this country is and always has been corrupt. And I'm not talking about his Donald Trump's womanizing, whether he has or hasn't. I really don't care about that. That means nothing to me. Whether he, because yes, presidents in the past, Democratic presidents and Republican presidents have probably had affairs. There's a number of them on both sides have been documented, from Eisenhower and his driver to FDR to Mr. Kennedy.
Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson and, even Jefferson.
Martin Luther King.
Jefferson Clinton.
And Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a list.
Yeah. But the venality. Mr. Trump is venal. Mr. Trump is someone who puts everything in terms of how it benefits him personally, whether it's politically or in business. In fact, he's the first president who would not distance himself from his business interests. And he can say anything he wants about George Washington having two desks, a presidential desk and a business desk, but I think he should study history a little bit more and understand that at least in modern times, presidents have put their interests in blind trusts and walked away from that. He hasn't. He has done everything he can to make his bottom line grow. That's not the way we do it in America. And if that is the way we do it in America, I'm done.
So I don't want to put words in your mouth about the characteristics that you were defining or describing in what you just said, but it sounds like self-interest might be a fair description. Self-interest at the expense...
Self-interest and self-dealing.
So, okay. Do you remember the first time that you ran across someone that you thought was self-interested to the point of it making you that angry? Because there were certainly people before Donald Trump.
I'm trying to think of the first time.
And then on top of that, you saw that person getting away with what you saw as intense self-interest at the expense of the good of other people.
Boy, I would really rather talk about the flip side of this, because I know the person who, I remember the person who inspired me first with leadership and made me see that intelligence, competence, and empathy were the core values of leadership, and made me want to follow in his footsteps. He was a director, and he treated everyone, he expected the best of everyone and expected you to do your job, but he always did his, and he was prepared for everything you might do. So he expected you to be prepared for everything everyone else might do. So that's leadership. And that's the first person I saw. His name was John Morrow. I can use his name. He passed away 25 years ago. But, you know, Charlotte Little Theater, brilliant man. And that's leadership. That's what inspired me. What I consider the venality, I've seen venality in my life, and I've seen people get away with it. And I can't remember the first time I saw a person get away with it. But yeah, it ticks me off.
Yeah, and Lydia, I know you have something to say, but Jim, you've been fairly quiet. Do you remember the first time you encountered someone that you thought of as a leader that you just thought, I would follow that person?
Yeah, I certainly do. It was when I joined the Boy Scouts, and it was a kid who was 2 years older than me, and man, he led me down the wrong path. He was one of these guys. He was a guy who was a cheerleader, you know, with all the girls, and he would put on the alf, and he would hold the pom-poms, and he'd do all the flips. But he was also sleeping with all the girls, and he's the one who introduced me to like drugs and alcohol, and he was just a charismatic person,
absolute leader.
I was a follower and have always been a follower, and that has been my biggest problem in life.
Lydia.
I guess when I just listen to what's been said and step back a little bit, and I can agree that Donald Trump is bold and a renegade, and I know he's trying to blow up the system and all of those things, but I guess my question is, aside from the Trump tax plan, like, what has he actually accomplished that's helping Americans? And I think some people have benefited from the Trump tax plan. A lot of money's been put in my family's pocket, but the federal deficit is blowing up. There's no Trump care, so health care has not been fixed by Donald Trump. Infrastructure,
okay. Well, let's go back. Yeah, I think we've covered.
What's so great?
We've covered that, Morgan.
Oh. Well, I don't want to interrupt Lydia because I really like all of her ideas, but I just wanted to add that I think the premise of this conversation is feeling awfully stale to me as a young person, where people are saying it's business as usual. You know, other people have been corrupt. Other people have lied. I'm 35. This generation that I just want to empower everybody. I mean, this is a time for change. Like you were saying, oh, it's just more transparent than it was before. It's like we have more tools and technology than ever to actually physically change what's happening in our country. And I'm just so hopeful for that. And I feel like the person, if I can anticipate Rachel's question, when I watched Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez in Knock Down the House, and have been following her career, follow her on Twitter and Instagram story, she's amazing. But Knocking Down the House is about women running for Congress, and it just shows that you can be a renegade, you can take all of this change that's happening in our country and do it without breaking the law. You can work within the system to change the system, even though the system needs to change. It was so empowering. She is the first time I've seen myself represented in politics, and I just want to applaud all the work she's doing.
Thank you for that, Morgan. And I think we need to continue the conversation about leadership qualities, because there are so many elements of that that we didn't get into. And that's our time. That's this edition of Coastline Beneath the Surface. Thank you, Bruce, Joe, Connette, Carl, Lee, Jim, Lydia, Daryl, Morgan, and Cedric. Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel,
yes,
for being our leader.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Coastline producer is Caitlin Freund. News producer is Rachel Keith. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org. Get the podcast. Find it on the HQR app. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Beneath the Surface.